Building connections from one community to another, hearing their stories, their issues, and celebrating their culture. This is Guest Editor on KCLR, funded by Commission Na Mban with a television licence fee.
This evening's guest editor is Coit Barden, who takes us back to the origins of biodynamic farming and brings us right to the heart of a biodynamic farming community in Thomastown, Kilkenny.
I'm here in Durr Point on the farm. I'm meeting Noel and Cornelia and Timmy. Good morning.
For the kittens and the calves.
We're listening to the sounds of the farm.
There's Mammy Cat.
And this is not not just an ordinary farm, because in a moment we'll hear from Noel, I suppose, on the vision of something new in this area in Kilkenny. Not quite new in other parts, but Noel has given us a little bit of history on biodynamic farming and what that espouses for a new community of people here in Kilkenny. We're sitting here in this beautiful shed. Bart is milking. Cornelia and Evelyn are here. Tell me a little bit, I suppose, about biodynamic farming first. What is it?
So, well, firstly, biodynamics is a system of organic farming. So it would have been the first organised approach to organic and regenerative farming in kind of 1920s, when Rudolf Steiner gave his agriculture course. So it's really a very holistic approach to farming, the focus being on producing nutrient-dense food, so food that not just has all the vitamins and minerals, but also has life forces in it that feed us on all levels. Very much a focus on soil biology, where plants can get all the nutrition they need through microbial interactions. But it also goes a bit further, because it takes into account the atmosphere as well. And a lot of the processes in growing are atmospheric processes, like photosynthesis and all fruit set and blossoming and seed set. So we not only farm the soil, we farm the atmosphere as well, if you like. And also, everybody knows that the sun and the moon has an influence on plant growth and animal fertility. And so it's not too much of a stretch of the imagination to imagine the planets and the star realm as well having an influence on life on Earth. That affects plant growth, and it affects how all living processes, in a way. But yeah, so we farm in harmony with nature, and we should always be asking, you know, how does nature does it? Yeah, it's always staying with living processes and nurturing that and working with nature to produce nutrient-dense food.
Is it different to, I suppose, conventional farming?
Yeah, well, I suppose, like I said, the first point is that it's chemical-free. It's an organic system of farming. The main differences would be the use of the biodynamic preparations. So there's a number of preparations that we use in biodynamic farming that are made from cow manure and quartz crystal, and also a number of medicinal herbs that are, it's a like a fermentation process where they're buried in the ground. They're used to enliven the soil, and each one has a particular role in the compost and the soil. And so they activate different minerals in the soil. So if you have a healthy soil, then you have healthy plants, healthy animals, healthy people. So biodynamics really is about those connections between soil and plant and animal and people, and yeah, creating a healthy living system.
You mentioned Rudolf Steiner. It originated with his body of work, did it?
Early 1920s, there was a group of farmers in kind of Central Europe. It was just after the introduction of artificial nitrogen. So before that, farmers and growers had recycled manures and plant residues and further for fertility and mineral cycle. But after the introduction of artificial manures, in particular artificial nitrogen, the farmers started to see a change. So that kind of bypassed the natural system. So they had concerns about the decline in the quality of food, and in particular seed quality, vitality of seed, and also fertility in animals. So they would have been people who would have been involved in the, are aware of anthroposophy and aware of Steiner's work. So they approached him and asked him, would he be prepared to give them a course or a lecture on what they should do about this, you know, the fact that artificial nitrogen had been introduced and they seen the detrimental effects. So there's a bit of a story to it, but eventually he did. He agreed to give them. It was 8 lectures that he delivered. The term biodynamics wasn't really known at the time. It was just lectures that he gave these farmers on ways to heal the earth. So he was very much, every farmer was individual, and that each would have to try what worked in their own context, and very much not to be dogmatic about it or fixed about it. Key was learning to observe your own locality and your own plants and your own animals, and really getting to know how those systems worked. And really important that people don't get dogmatic about what he recommended, that they find their own way. So yeah, it grew out of that, and they found that his recommendations work. This year is the 100-year anniversary of the lectures. They were in 1924. There's a lot of celebrations going on this year around that. And so it's basically been evolving ever since, the whole 100 years. The language Steiner used was very difficult to understand, and many people have translated his agriculture lectures, and people have different interpretations of them, because in a way they're quite open to interpretation. But I think that was the point, that people really had to strive to kind of figure out their own way and really delve into his, even to really fully understand the agriculture lectures, you really need to study his medical lectures, because that gives a lot of background and insight into what he was actually talking about. Because he was a clairvoyant, he was a doctor, and he'd studied chemistry and biology, and but he could really see into the workings of things. Like, you could look into a living organism and see what was going on. And what's really lovely now is that what's been discovered in microbiology backs up everything he spoke about. He just used a different language.
How did it make its way over here?
To Ireland?
Yes.
Yeah, so...
And then to Kilkenny. Tell me a little bit about it in Ireland. Are there many farmers?
Well, it's interesting that we're here in Kilkenny, because this is where it started. So Anthony and Eve Kay would have brought biodynamics to Ireland in the early 80s. And they would have had their base here in Kilkenny.
They were farmers.
They had a little community. Mm. And not far from here. So after the lectures, like in Central Europe, the people kind of, you know, they went their different ways, and some went to Australia, some went to the States. But it spread throughout Europe and to the UK. And, so it wasn't until the early 80s it came to Ireland. So there's a strong community of biodynamic farmers in Ireland at the moment. I got involved maybe 15, 20 years ago. I actually discovered biodynamics in India and was just really fascinated by it, because it was the first kind of system of farming that was a really holistic approach. It didn't just consider the soil and the, you know, the plants and the animals, but also the wider cosmos, like the influence of the planetary and star realm. So we have a biodynamic association. So it's basically developed since the early 80s here. And now it's, in the last few years, it's actually gained quite a lot of traction. The association is quite strong. So I'm involved in the association, and I make the preparations for the association. And we had a bit of a boost there some years ago, and it's it's typical it would be in Ireland, but Waterford Distillery were one of the first distilleries to distill biodynamic whiskey in the world. So that and they approached a number of farmers here who would have had a leaning towards biodynamics. They would have been organic, to ask them to grow malt and barley for the distillery. So we have four or five certified Demeter farms growing malt and barley for the distillery now. There's about 10 or 12 certified Demeter farms in Ireland, but there'd be quite a few farmers using preparations that wouldn't necessarily be certified for various reasons, maybe because of the expense or they just don't need to be.
But tell me, just on that, because you've mentioned the word preparations quite a bit, and I'm just looking at Bart and Cornelia. We're about to feed the calves, but Bart is putting something into the milk. Now, I know that's probably not the preparation you're talking about, but tell me a little bit about the support or the preparations that you use in.
Yeah, so the two main preparations are two field sprays called horn manure and horn silica. The horn manure, it's basically horn cow dung from a horned cow, a lactating cow, that's put into a horn and buried over the winter period. And the horn silica is ground up quartz crystal that's put in a horn and buried over the summer period. So the horn manure works on all the kind of lime processes, so everything below ground, so root development, soil porosity, soil biology. And it's buried in the soil over winter because we often think that winter is a dormant time, but it's not. The soil is quite alive and receives influences from the cosmos during the winter to prepare itself for the following spring, for the growing season. The horn manure works on all the below ground processes, and then the horn silica works on all the atmospheric processes like fruit set and seed set and blossoming. So they're all atmospheric processes, they all happen above ground. Horn manure is sprayed on the soil, and the horn silica is sprayed as a fine mist in the atmosphere. And what it actually does is increases the ability of the plants to absorb light, so it increases photosynthesis. Really the most important life process we have. Everything we rely on, our food, our shelter, everything comes from photosynthesis, because all the new energy that comes into this system comes from the sun, and through that process of photosynthesis, where it takes carbon, hydrogen, oxygen and nitrogen. There was a teacher of mine, Hugh Lovell, he had this, well, it wasn't his saying, but he referred to the, we all know that saying, the when the land is flowing with milk and honey. And that it actually refers to that process where plants are making sugars and putting them down into the through the roots as root exudates to feed soil biology. And the soil biology is making this milky rich amino acid nutrition for the plants to feed. And that saying, when the land is flowing with milk and honey, that process is actually working. So they're the two field sprays. And then there's the six other compost preparations. They're called compost preparations because they've been used in the compost, but they're actually, they have a much broader spectrum of use. So they're made from yarrow, chamomile, stinging nettle, oak bark, dandelion and valerian. And then we also use horsetail. And they all relate to specific minerals and trace elements as well. So they will release, if they're used on plants, they can release or activate certain minerals so that the plant can take them up from the soil. They're used as a set in a compost heap, and they basically help to stabilize all the nutrients in the compost heap, in particular nitrogen, because nitrogen is very volatile and tends to oxidize or leach, or they help stabilize it in the compost, so it's much better. It's in a more stable, complex form for when you put your compost on your land, that you don't lose it to leaching or oxidation. I've been lucky. I trained with a guy in France, Vincent Masson, to make preparations, and he makes very good quality preparations and works with a lot of wine growers in France. And I'm making really good progress with preparations now, and the next kind of stage is to do trials. Not so much that there's a need to prove it, but yeah, there actually is a little bit in me that wants to be able to show people that they work, because a lot of people have this idea of biodynamics that it's a bit airy-fairy or a bit, but it's not. It's actually very much science-based. It's a very holistic approach to farming. It'd be lovely to be able to show in a little bit more scientific way to the more conventional community that it is a real option, you know, for farmers. It's really about promoting health. When we live in a healthy environment and we eat healthy food, you know, it not just feeds us on a physical level, but it feeds us on an emotional and a mental level, so we can think better and we can make better decisions, and we actually see the whole world differently. We see solutions as opposed to problems. You know, we all know we have lots of problems in the world, and yeah, but it's better to focus on what we can do about it and what solutions, and there are solutions. And I know it can be really challenging for people at the moment because it can seem overwhelming.
I know you're at the beginning of this beautiful adventure, and you know, we'll chat to Vart and Cornelia and Marika hopefully. And is there an opportunity that you will share or teach some of this?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
That there might be a training centre?
We actually run trainings already through NOTS for Introduction to Biodynamics.
Oh, through NOTS? Who are
NOTS? NOTS are the National Organic Training Skill Net.
Ah, okay.
They're an amazing organisation that supports trainings for in all aspects of regenerative and organic agriculture, mm-hmm. food production. Our group have just recently purchased an amazing piece of land here in Thomastown. And I've known Vart and Marika for 10 or 12 years through the Biodynamic Association. That's how we got to know each other initially. And we've had this idea for a good few years that we'd maybe do something together. And now it's actually happened. So we've a lot of different plans, but one of the plans is to create a centre for the Biodynamic Association and for the preparations, and to build a preparation store and to run trainings and to run workshops and events around biodynamics. There'll be other stuff obviously as well, but that's one aspect of it, yeah, for sure. And more than any system of agriculture, like, there's lots of different systems of regenerative agriculture around at the minute, whether it's green natural farming or agroforestry. Or it's important to say that none of them on their own are a fix-all of the conventional system. Like, it's like 90% of any system is good agronomy, like good farming practice, good animal and plant husbandry, and really paying attention to what's going on your farm and learning to observe how to read the landscape. And in a conventional mindset, people often think about weeds and how to get rid of them, and in a regenerative approach we look at weeds, or so-called weeds. I don't even like to call them weeds, but what's the weeds actually saying? Why is it there? It's fulfilling a role. What minerals is it accumulating? Is it addressing compaction? Why is it there?
So you're talking, say, for example, you know, foxgloves have emerged on a space that was kind of dug up, and that tends to come on disrupted land.
Yeah, again, like, yes, like, what would nature do? Like, nature doesn't want bare soil. So if you excavate an area, the first thing you're going to get is a range of plants that's going to address deficiencies that's in that soil. Mm. Nature wants to get the ground covered as fast as possible to start photosynthesizing, to start putting root exudates into the soil, to kickstart that biology. So usually it'll be compaction, so it'll be your top root, you know, docks, dandelion, things like that.
Guest editor, KCLR.
Cornelia Cootie-Abor, thank you for having me here today. In your point, at the start of this beautiful adventure. It's probably not the start in your eyes. You've probably spent quite a while getting to this point, but you now have land. Noel has started a little bit of work on that land growing herbs, but where are we going now?
So we are on Chen Point Farm, where we are since 1.5 years, and growing my herb for making herb salts and herb teas together with Marike. Yes, and yeah, there's a big field of hazelnut trees we're looking after, and there we have our herbs as well. A big part of our herb project is also the social farming, that where people with additional needs come and work, to get meaningful work. And yeah, so for that it needs certain facilities.
Eru is also the name of some delicious herbal salts that I have tasted.
Exactly.
Yourself and Marika are working on that. Tell me a little bit about it and how it came about.
I'm a gardener, but I was always more interested in the human bit of it. So working with people together, with children especially as well, to connect to nature, to growing food, to really get this connection. Where does food come from? Where, and yeah, to connect to nature. And out of that, then it came that became that, that we, what is a good work for children, for people to connect. And yeah, growing herbs is really ideal because it has always to do something for everyone. It's like even somebody who can't really participate in work, even just to be around and get the smells, and the, it always looks lovely as well. So that's how it started.
What does it contain? The herbs it contains are obviously medicinal and culinary, I imagine.
Exactly. It's always a combination. You see, it's like it has to taste nice, but of course it's also always good for your health as well. Mm. So there is chives and parsley, savory, oregano, nasturtiums, loads of different herbs mixtures in it. And they always taste nice, but also they support your digestion and they, you know, to help digest. The Irish sea salt in it as well. So it's 75% Irish sea salt and 25% of our herbs.
Irish herbs.
Irish herbs, exactly. So it's all Irish, all from here. And the herb tea is the same. It has to taste nice, but also it's always good for your health as well. So it's herbs which, again, you know, support your immune system and your digestion and just your well-being.
Yeah. And you mentioned the social farming, and yes, for people in particular who may not be able to work per se but can still enjoy the benefits of even the smell of the herbs.
Exactly, and be part of a work process and be part of a working environment of a group. And yeah, it's really lovely. We have two participants at the moment who come once a week a day, and yeah, we just take them along, you know, with the cows, work with the cows. It's just a lovely thing that there's these projects are together. So we first herb with the cows, you know, feed the calves, bring the cows to the field, and then do whatever is needed in the garden, weeding, planting, but also harvesting the herbs, drying them, processing them.
And there's also I saw some farm camps for children.
Yes.
Tell me about that, because that must be magic for a child.
To connect children to nature, to farms. We all eat food from farms, from nature. And to connect them to that. And I strongly believe if you really get to know something, to love something, you won't hurt it, you won't harm it. How much effort it is to grow a potato or grow a leaf or make milk and then make yogurt and or cheese, how precious that is. So we won't waste it. It's really, and we have to get the value, all which just grows by itself around us. And we can't make it, but we are so depending on it. And they come and yeah, we just work along on the farm. So this springtime in the camp, you're feeding the calves. And we didn't see the birth of the calf. The cow was hiding. And then, but seen a newborn calf. And yeah, see all the farm work. And we always make a fire and cook lunch. So we harvest vegetables, whatever we find, make a meal on the fire. And we always make us a cheese or yogurt with the children together. So we get the milk from the cows, warm it up on the fire and make yogurt or cheese. And really that the children see the whole process. And again, to value what it is and their beauty.
I know at forest school, the child who asked me to help them climb up onto the tree, I always said no.
Exactly.
And I said that when you are able to climb up on the tree, that's your time to climb the tree.
Exactly. That's exactly the rules I have as well.
Yeah.
If you can't get up on the tree or the silage rail, then you're not quite ready to be up there yet.
Exactly.
Just keep practicing.
Keep practicing.
If you manage to get up, then you will also manage to get down again safely. So.
And it's a very exciting moment.
Exactly. Exactly. Yes, yes, yes.
Will we go over to the herbs?
Yeah, there is savory and dill, which is not yet up because it was just too cold. Chives, which we had already third harvest, actually. Sage, rosemary, lavender, oregano, and then brown. And John's there, the lint.
It's interesting you leave the lines of the dock in.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I try to keep them a bit where they belong.
Contained. But yeah, that's one of the tenets, I guess, of biodynamic farming, that it all shows us something. And if we observe, we'll become more connected, I guess, to the soil and to knowing what it.
Exactly. It tells us something. Yeah, exactly.
And when is the next batch of Eru salt being made?
Yeah, we started drying, so I have kind of dried already. Yeah, I still wait for the deal. Parsley. Well, I feel a bit of parsley already, but yeah, it's just very slow this year. But I hope
because of the weather.
The weather was just, it was just cold and wet for a long time. So, but it's coming now. So I would say by August we. Actually, goes a bit for the social farming. Obviously, people with permits, you know, they're kind of, what do they do with all? And they need to be involved in real work, have a real task, not just a made up something, but a real task. And be tired in the evening and have achieved something and contribute to the community, to the society, even with their work. It's just, I think it's a human right, really.
And that belonging again. I admitted recently that I just want to belong. We all just want to belong. Marijke has joined. Tell me a little bit about how you came to the world of I suppose, biodynamic farming.
Yes. I suppose I grew up quite in the countryside in Switzerland and had a very close connection to nature. And then did a bit of this and that, came to Ireland and did a year in Kildalton College in Piltown and learned a lot about plants and how to grow things. And somehow something seemed to be just missing for me. Like, you'd learn about growing cabbage and pests they can get, and if you have this and that problem, let's say white fly or aphids, you'd just be told what chemical to use to spray it off. And to me, that didn't seem to be the real answer to the problem. So I went back to Switzerland and looked for training and did actually a 3-year biodynamic training in horticulture and found a lot of the answers that I was looking for in biodynamic by a much more holistic approach to growing things, where you don't just look at the plants, but you have a much broader way of understanding the soil, understanding the weather, understanding the influence of the planets, which really, I think we're very familiar with the influence of the moon on women, on the sea, with the tides coming up and down. Of course, it affects the plants who are full of sap and juice. So it's very important to keep an eye on those rhythms. And I think there's a lot of evidence by now that shows clear indications of how this can be helpful in growing and growing healthy food, growing nutritious food that we really need to develop ourselves, I suppose.
Noel mentioned that the scientists have caught up.
That's right. Yes, that's right. Yes.
I guess it's nice to have backing.
Once you come to quantum agriculture or quantum physics, there's a lot of answers that can be found scientifically now that 100 years ago when biodynamics was started wasn't available. So it really came out of more spiritual searching in the very beginnings. But by now, yeah, scientific approaches have shown that the ways were right and that we carry on the way we were learning, and we're still learning loads every year, every time. The weather is never the same, so you're going to have to adapt.
Observation is a key tenet of this type of farming.
True, very true, yes. Yes, I think if you're producing food or grow grass for animals, you really want to get to know your land. So knowing your location, knowing your weather, knowing your soil, taking really good care of the soil and not just using it as a growing medium that you put on whatever nutrients and then the plants can grow, but rather work with the structure, bringing nutritious compost that has had a good process of rotting down and creating humus that is enriching the soil, that increases water capacity and can buffer a lot more drought and wet weather. So you're farming the earth, but you're farming the air by being noticing the difference. It'll take a time to study it and to really understand it, but there's indications by people who have done a lot of work who researched and just show how dependent we are on them and how Mother Earth really needs that connection and can benefit. I suppose the moon is obvious, but if you look at Venus, who circles around the sun 5 times in a year, so a year is a sun year, like the sun goes around once, then the Venus would go around 5 times in that time. And you'll find that in patterns, like the way Venus goes in loops around the sun. From our perspective, it looks as if Venus goes with the sun, and then if she stands still a bit ahead of the sun, and then the sun goes a bit faster, and Venus goes actually backwards, and she stands still again, and then she moves forward again fast. So that's a patterns that you can then recognize if you, for example, cut an apple open in half, and you can see the same loops with five chambers where the seeds are in. So there's things that you can observe that are very real for everybody there to observe and to find out about.
And would that impact then seeding or growing or, you know, times that you would...
Definitely, yes. And you would probably connect certain plants to certain planets. So like, for example, a big tree that has a much longer life cycle. And you might find that there's maybe a 30-year repetition, and that's a long time to observe, but that will be a Saturn pattern. So there's lots of connections we can find out about.
There's a community growing in this type of farming here in Ireland, isn't there?
That's right, yes. It's getting a bit of grip, or getting a bit of PR, I suppose, lately. Especially with the whiskey industry getting hold of biodynamic growers to create biodynamic whiskey, which the biodynamic wine has been well established in the world.
And there's a bit of grip, there's a bit of interest now.
That's right, yes. See, I think people are getting more aware of what food is for us, Well, we've just managed to find a bit of land in Thomastown that we really want to develop into a community farm where care is taken of the land and of growing healthy things and of the animals. It's a beautiful spot, yes, right next to the River Nor, just outside Thomastown. It's 40 acres, 47 acres.
At the back of Mount Juliet.
That's right, if you were to... Back gates of Mount Juliet. It's plain fields just now. It's been used for tillage the last 7 years. Belong to a bigger estate and has some mature forest with bluebells, and just a beautiful spot really to go. Yes, so we'd like to develop it into a place of learning and a place of connecting and a place of studying and really showing that there's new ways, there's other ways of dealing with problems that arise, and also our power that we have in comparison to how agriculture is going on the big scale. I think as consumers, we have a lot to say with our money of what we buy. That's our way we can make a difference. If we decide to even just have local milk or buy local meat or be aware of the quality of the vegetables you buy, you can support somebody. You're not just doing something good for yourself, which of course is important, but you're also supporting a grower or a farmer who takes care of his land and his animals and as a more sustainable approach to the earth.
Thank you, Marijke. You mentioned quality of food, and I know that's at the basis of everything really in this type of farming.
That's right, yes. Yeah, like, I think most people wouldn't be so aware unless you're really busy with growing yourself. And I suppose in Ireland there's a lot of people still involved with that. But if you know how seed is produced nowadays to provide growers, like for example, let's say carrot seeds or cabbage or cauliflower, would have been manufactured, let's say, in a very sterile environment where they inbreed a certain cauliflower with certain qualities for, I don't know how many years, 7-8 years, and have a second line inbred for so many years. And then after those 7 years, they cross them to plants that are really poorly and not very healthy creatures, and by crossing them you mix up the genes and they create a F1 hybrid, which is all beautiful, all strong, grows all the same, is already at the same spot to harvest, same time frame. So that's what we're being provided in the supermarkets with, and that's just a very different quality than if you would have open pollinated seed, which is what people have been doing for thousands of years, breeding and growing their own food and, you know, saving the best one to create the seeds for next year. And with a cauliflower, that would be a second year cycle. So it's a longer process, and you really have to take care of your plants, and you have to have a healthy plant. And that's how sustainability in the long term is seen. And that's what's nourishing people. Whereas with the F1 hybrid, first year you get a good crop, but then you can't save the seeds from those plants, because the year after you'll have a huge diversity and not much of that will be edible. So it's a very different approach of how you connect with the plants, how you connect with nature, and what you eat internally, what it does to you, I suppose, as an organism yourself, if you have that monoculture of all the same. And it's not very we are all individuals. We're all different. It's a bit odd to think that we all should eat exactly the same. And actually, it would be much more important to have local varieties and have local food that is suited to our situations and our weather that can supply us with what we need.
So we're heading up the lane again. Where are we going to now? And Bart, thanks for taking some time out of your busy day.
So we're going to go to the cows. They've just been milked and they get every day their fresh paddock of grass. You will see shortly that our cows look a bit different than most cows here in Ireland. So most of our cows have the horns still on their head. So we don't dehorn what's part of biodynamic farming. They just grow up with their horns and we take each animal. In biodynamic farming, we work with the natural processes of the soil, the land, the farm organism as well, but also with the animals. We leave them in their natural environment and behavior. So the horns are part of the animals. So we have to make our systems around the animals so that they can behave in their natural way, because if they can behave in their natural way, that promotes their health, that promotes also the health of the produce, milk in this case, that we give them to the humans. So I guess that's the main principle. There is researching that horned cattle give a different form of milk that we can digest easier as well. The horns are connected to the digestive tract of the cow, connected to the sinuses and to the breathing. Yeah, it's playing into the whole organism of the cow itself as well. So that's why we leave them on. They definitely need more space.
Bart, where did you come from and how did you end up here in Durpoint? And how did you end up as part of this new brave community that are going to trailblaze a farm in Kilkenny that is biodynamic and possibly a training space and so on?
Well, you know, it always starts with a lady, as it does.
Not a cow.
Not a cow. I followed her to Ireland and, yeah, it was the first part of Camp Hill Durpoint. I got to know the whole social realm as well, and the connection between people and land works. So after doing my biodynamic training in the UK. And then about 5 years ago, I started this partnership with the local farm owner here. And we run this enterprise together, this biodynamic dairy farm. So we milk about 40 pork cows at the moment.
All here surrounding us, yeah. Very tamely.
We milk them once a day, because we have kind of land a bit further away, so we have to walk them in the summer quite far. So it suits us just very well. We have time for other things as well besides just milking.
Does that impact productivity then, or how do you...
It does. So you kind of have 70% of the milk volume and 80% of the solids, but the cows, they're less pushed as well, so there is a health benefit as well to it, so they get easier back into calf, and you can increase your stocking rate slightly as well, because they don't need as much grass as the ones that are milked twice a day. So maybe in the end you get 80% of the milk, you could say, still, because you can increase the stocking rate. But yeah, and the cows thrive well on it as well. So, and it's good for me as a family man as well, like that we still have time for things and also for all the other projects like you heard on the farm as well, because it's nice to have the diverse work with the children and with the classes and with the social farming to have a bit of time for that. For me, the whole biodynamic movement is also about how we connect to our locality, how we connect to people as well, because just being outside, but you can share that as well, it's wonderful, you know. So I guess that is very much what that project is about, is to just share this common work that so many people do, like as a producer with the wider community as such.
And there's a group of you.
Yeah.
We met Noel, your wife, Marijke,
Cornelia.
Yeah, but in a way, we're kind of a cooperative nearly.
Yeah.
Of individuals. Like I could say I'm the dairy farmer. So Noel is a herb grower, and Marek and Cornelia are working with people and social farming. So we have all our own enterprises. Mm-hmm. But we come in a cooperative way together,
sure.
Because we have kind of that same vision of sharing this with the wider community and creating local food and produce. So, that's what binds us. And it's nice to work in this synergy really together, because together in a way we can work much further and we don't exhaust ourselves, because by taking on lots of different projects as well, you need a lot of people to carry it as well. And just having these different enterprises next to each other, but working still towards the same vision, it works really well for us. Like, it's really enjoyable, and we can be helpful to each other as well when somebody is busy as well, or take time off when somebody else can step in then as well. So that's also really nice to work that way with more people together. So on the land. Yeah.
And I'm wondering, is that thing that ties you together, is it a value? Is it the value of biodynamic farming, or the value of the land, or, you know?
I guess biodynamics stands quite central for us, but... So I guess that's one of the things, but it is also to connect to the locality and people. So, and it can be through different forms. Like, it can go through social farming by bringing people with special needs onto land, or summer camps, or producing local food. But it's in a way that we connect to people. That is, I guess, the second value side by dynamics. Yeah.
What is ahead for you now over the coming months?
So yeah, I guess we have just gone. The calving is just finished for us on the farm,
here. Which is later than a regular farm.
It just suits us very well. We have very small shed space as well, and the cows just go straight out after calving, So it is a practical reason as well. Now, the way climate is going, some people say, oh, I wish we were like you, because in a way, maybe we pushed cows a bit less hard that way as well. The weather kind of doesn't play a ball with us, then the system easily gets upset as well. So I guess we don't farm too intensively as well. And I still, even on challenging years, I still enjoy really the farming, because I have a bit more leeway with the system I'm running, that I'm not pushing, or I don't get challenged too much if the weather doesn't play with us, you know? Now we will go into silage making time as well.
The new land, I know Noel mentions that he started the medicinal herb growing already.
Yeah.
So will you just work in a staged approach to getting to working over there, to having...
Yeah, well, we already have sown all the land into crops this springtime. So we sowed grasses, some herbal pastures, and some grain. So another thing, I guess, what we try to aim for in biodynamic farming is to have a farm system that works within its own boundaries, so that we don't have to buy in external inputs to make the farm system go round as such. So we grow our own grain and roll it for the cows as well. And as such, we save our own seed for pre-sowing that the next year as well.
I mean, we're surrounded by all the cows here, and I'm come from a farm myself. I don't think I've ever met such tamer cows. I mean, we always had a pet cow or two, but to have an entire flock just here licking your elbows, smelling you, rubbing off you.
Well, it's great. I kind of spend a bit of time with them because I want them the same. I guess if we want to work with people, and kids, it's good to have them that tame as well, but it's just handy sometimes as well, because when a cow is just relaxed, it's half the like, that's just part of their need, like, they need to be relaxed to be healthy as well. If they're constantly stressed, wouldn't be good for them either. But I just like it as well that I can just walk up to a cow, and if there is something wrong, I can just check her in the fields. But the downside is sometimes if they feel not like going, they just stand still and that's it, you know. So they say, "Hey, what do you want?" I'm happy here.
Do you sing to them? I was chatting to a woman the other day, and she said that she remembers her grandparents used to sing to the cows.
I guess I sing to myself. They might think that I'm singing to them. But they all have their names as well. So sometimes somebody needs to ask me, "Oh, what's about her? She has this number." I said, "Can't remember the number, but if I know the name, kind of, you know." And you get to know each you get to know each individuality, and it, like, you make a real bond with each cow, and then you also know, oh, if to this cow you can approach a bit in a different way sometimes, or when they're calving, you know, just be, yeah. Like, we run also the calves on cows themselves, so that's, we bring two or three calves under each cow to rear them. But it's good then to know which cow is social, or which one is kind of all right, to, like, is socially a bit more all right to work with. And the best for them is to suckle cows, like they are born to do, you know. So
for how long though? Well,
we run them for 3 months, so with the cow, you can do longer, but I guess 3 months is a really good start for them as well. Just they thrive really well under it because they have that connection to the cow then as well. Fresh milk constantly, no problems with scours or diarrhea, or it works very well. Yeah.
You've been listening to Coit Barden, tonight's guest editor, who brought us to Thomastown to learn a little more about biodynamic farming.
Guest editor on KCLR, funded by Commission a Man with a Television Licence Fee.